The first reading is from Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 1 to 5. Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you'll find it again. Give portions to seven, yes, to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. If clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there will it lie. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the plant at the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the paths of the wind or how the body is formed in the mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things.
The second reading is from Ecclesiastes 12, 1 to 5, page 677 in the Church Bibles. Ecclesiastes 12, 1 to 5. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of your trouble come and the years approach, when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark, and the clouds return after rain. When the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men stood, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those looking through the window grow dim. When the doors to the streets are closed, and the sound of the grinding fades, when the man rises up to the sound of birds, but all songs grow faint. When men are afraid of heights and the danger in the streets, when among trees blossom and the grasshoppers drag himself along and desire no longer to strive, the man goes to his eternal home and the mourners go about the streets.
The last reading is from Ecclesiastes 12, 9 to 14. Not only was the teacher wise, but also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads, like their collected saying like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. Be warned, my sons, of anything in addition to them, of making many books, there is no end, and such much study wearies in the body. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including everything hidden, every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil.
Today I'm concluding our Ecclesiastes series. Just to recap what we have learned so far, Chris Wigram started off by teaching us that life that is not lived wisely and does not put God first is full of frustrations. Frustration in history and nature, frustration in work, frustration in pleasure, frustration in death, etc. Rachie taught us that the Hebrew word hevel should be understood as vapor, and that the uncreated God breaks into the created realm, and therefore we have eternity set inside us. Chris Revley talked about three things. The riches can't be taken with us, so we should be content with God's gift. That saying such as, a good name is better than precious ointment, and sorrow is better than laughter, are counter-cultural. And that we should be careful with how we approach God and what we say before him. Last week, Andy spoke about the foolish getting more attention than the wise in today's world, which is true. He also encouraged us to enjoy life as it comes, in spite of the reality of death, and trust in God amid random things happening in life. This morning, I'm going to speak from chapters 11 and 12 about certainty in God in an uncertain world. What is certainty? Certainty is being absolutely sure and confident about our knowledge of something, which could be our relationship, our education, our health, our job, our family, our life, our death, our God, etc. But the writer of Ecclesiastes in chapter 11 repeats the phrase, "You do not know." Divide your means seven ways or even eight, but you do not know what disaster may happen on earth. As you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Even the seeds you sow, you do not know which one will prosper. This or that, or whether both alike will be good. In chapter 3, verse 11 and 8:17, the writer also talks about the unfathomable work of God. This idea is reflected in chapter 11, verse 2, where the writer makes it clear that although we are ignorant about most things, we should act. It is all frustratingly uncertain. But we can see in the book that we can be certain about God. We can be certain in God. So the central idea of my sermon this morning is that although we cannot know what our future holds, although we don't often understand the work of God, although we don't have any control over our aging and death, we have certainty in God. Why? Because he is the maker of everything. Because he is our shepherd and legislator. Because he is the one to whom our breath will return. Because he is the just judge. What kept the writer of Ecclesiastes going, and what keeps you and me going in this uncertain world, is our certainty in God. I shall come back to this central idea a little later, but let me say a few general things about the writer and his dominant view in the book. The main person who speaks in the book of Ecclesiastes is known as Koheleth, which literally means the leader of the assembly. It is because of these, by the way, that the Greek translators called the book Ecclesiastes. Remember the word ecclesia? Yes? Yeah. We talked about it here, which means assembly, and we used it for church. Traditionally, the person who speaks is known as the preacher. Some translations have teacher as well. So for some, he is leader. For others, he is preacher. For others, he is teacher. I will just call him Koheleth this morning. Say Koheleth. Koheleth, yes. For Koheleth, as Rachie explained very well a few Sundays ago, life is vapor, something unsubstantial, hence futile or vain. Some would use the term meaningless. I think vapor is a good translation, but futility, vanity, meaninglessness can also describe the situation Koheleth wants to get across. Koheleth starts his book by declaring, "Vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities. All is vanity," he says. Why does he say this? Why does he paint a very grim picture of life in this world? It is not my purpose to explain these questions this morning, but it is important to mention what led Qohelet to paint this sort of picture. Ecclesiastes is one of the wisdom writings in the Old Testament, including Proverbs and Job, and some parts of Psalms, and also the Song of Songs can be included in the wisdom writings. One common element in all the wisdom writings is the emphasis on pursuing and attaining wisdom for all areas of life. But they all have different internal emphases. For example, the writer of Proverbs teaches us that wisdom and right living lead to good life. For the writer of Job, wisdom and right living are important, but even if one is wise and righteous, they will still suffer. For Qohelet, whether one is wise, wealthy, or world leader, they will still die. Qohelet is not necessarily disagreeing with others, but he is providing a different kind of perspective. He seeks to educate his readers and us that although God has put eternity or a sense of past and future in their minds, their journey in this life will not continue into eternal kingship or eternal wealth or eternal wisdom, but rather journey in this life will end with death. To think otherwise is futile, vanity, meaningless. So in my view, Qohelet predominantly is not saying that toil, wealth, wisdom, knowledge, greatness, pleasure, or human pursuit of life, human pursuit of that life offers in this world per se is vapor. He's not saying that. He's not saying it is futile, meaningless, vanity. For Qohelet, it is not wrong to justly accumulate wealth. It is not wrong to apply wisdom in all areas of life, to display great leadership skills, and to enjoy food and drink and all that life offers. They are all God's good gift to be used at the right time, at the right place, in the right way, and for the right reasons. They are to be used with full knowledge, full understanding that we are all under God's scrutiny. But to think and act as if death is not a reality is vanity. To think and act as if meaningfulness of toil, wealth, wisdom, or any societal role depends only on the continuity of life in this world is futile. That sort of thinking is chasing after the wind or trying to catch mist or vapor. Like many of us today, Qohelet's audience must have had a weak sense of mortality. I have to admit that it was only since last July when I faced a series of medical examinations that my sense of mortality became stronger. It was brought home even more when in May this year, a very close friend of mine had a massive stroke and died within 12 hours. Qohelet tells me and you that we all exist between two poles, the poles of birth and death. Ever since we were born, we have been journeying towards death. He tells us that we will all die one day, and that our assessment of life should not be based on the thinking that the sort of life we live in this world will continue. For some of us, the present life may be a comfortable life, but for many of us, it may be a life full of struggles and uncertainties for all sorts of reasons. As we live between the two poles of birth and death, we study, we work, We marry, we have children, etc. But we do all this in a world that is uncertain. 10 years ago, on 15th of July 2007, that is yesterday, 10 years that is, Joe and I got married in this church. It was a very special day. It was also a day when Joe and I made a decision to step into a world that we had very little knowledge about. We began a journey that was at once exciting and uncertain. Looking back, I can say, and I'm sure Joe will agree with me, that we had certainty in only two things: our God and our love for one another. As you know, we come from two different backgrounds. Joe comes from a background where certainty is needed to take any step, whereas I come from a background where certainty is not a necessity, because it is not often possible. But I have observed during the last 24 years of my connection with Britain that even this great country, certainty is not always possible. We all want to be certain about our future, don't we? We want to know what the future holds. But the reality is that we cannot. We want to be certain about everything, including the weather, don't we? Yes. But we cannot be certain, particularly in Britain. Since 24th of June 2016, the nation of Britain has been living with a sense of uncertainty about its political and economic future in Europe and the world. The recent elections have deepened that uncertainty. Uncertainty creates anxiety, which affects us psychologically and physiologically. For Kohelet, uncertainty is caused by a number of things. I want to mention only three of them. First, uncertainty is caused by a lack of knowledge about what the future holds. In chapter 11, 1 to 6, he uses different metaphors to describe this. In verse 1, he says, "Send your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will get it back." Some translations have "cast your bread." NIV, helpfully, has "ship your bread." By the way, I noticed this morning that it is the New International Version of USA that says this, "ship your bread." Kohelet probably is talking about a commercial venture. He is saying, take a chance, take a commercial risk of sending or shipping your bread over the waters, because you may get a profit after a while. But it is an uncertain venture, because the vessel may encounter a heavy storm and sink, resulting in the loss of the whole shipment. But Kohelet advises his readers to divide their portion or their means 7 or 8 ways because of the unknown disaster. NIV tries again, and NIV USA tries to help us again by talking about investing in 7 or 8 ventures. Investing in 7 or 8 ventures. I don't think Kohelet had the idea of stock market portfolios in mind, but his point is clear. He is saying, do not put your eggs in one basket, because the future is uncertain. In verses 3 to 6, Kohelet uses farming metaphors of sowing and reaping in relation to wind, clouds, and rain. As some of you know, I come from a farming background. I'm a farmer's son, and farmers in my community are dependent on the direction of the wind and the nature of the clouds and rains to make their farming decisions. But there is always uncertainty. So they are always faced with risky decisions. So was Qohelet. So are we in our diverse walks of life. Secondly, in 11:5, Qohelet tells us that uncertainty derives from not knowing the work of God. He strengthens his argument by referring to our lack of knowledge about how the fetus becomes a living being. Despite the knowledge we have acquired over the years from science, most miscarriages remain unexplained. Also, there is no agreement as to when the fetus should be regarded as a human being. That shows that much of human conception and birth remains a mystery. So pregnant women, like farmers in my community, live with uncertainty. The reason for Qohelet is because they don't know the work of God. They don't know the work of God who makes everything. In 3:11 and 8:17, the passages I mentioned earlier, Qohelet utters these amazing words. God has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into human heart. Yet human beings cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. And in 8:17 he says, then I saw all the work of God that human beings cannot find out, the work that is done under the sun. However much human beings may toil in seeking, they will not find out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out. So lack of understanding, lack of knowledge, causes uncertainty. Thirdly, uncertainty is caused by our lack of control over aging and death. In 12:11 and 12:1, Qohelet says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years draw near when you will say, I have no pleasure in them. In the journey from youth to the days of trouble is clear. The phrase days of trouble refers to aging. Now I know, I'm ashamed to say that those days of trouble are catching up on me. When I was younger, I did not have gray hair. Even worse, I could play a 90-minute football match. I could walk 50 to 60 kilometers per day. I could sprint run. Sadly, I cannot do all this now. Young people, I used to do that, and my sons will not believe me. I'm getting older. I have no control over my aging. Qohelet uses even more frightening images. Magnus read earlier, and I'm sure many of you may not have understood it. In the metaphors she read, in verses 2 to 5 in chapter 12, Qohelet talks about legs bending, teeth falling, eyes weakening, and ears going deaf. Then in verse 7, he says, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. The reality of aging and death is very close to home for all of us. It was close to home for my family and myself in January this year when my father-in-law died. We cannot ignore the reality of aging and death, nor can we deny that this reality creates uncertainty in life. So what should we do? We must continue to hold on to our certainty in God. As we all know, certainty is a buzzword in this country at the moment. After the last month's election, Theresa May used it. Many others since then, including the governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, have used it. In the world of politics and economics, certainty primarily is in a stable governance and strong economy. Indeed, certainty in the world around us primarily is in things and beings which are tangible, which are visible, and which are scientifically provable. But in the world of Christianity, certainty primarily is in God, who is not tangible, visible, and scientifically provable. How can I say this? I can say this because Christianity is a faith based on the revelation of God. The revelation of God through His Word and His world. As Paul says, what can be known about God is plain to us because God has revealed it to us. How? First, through the revelation of His decreed will in the Scriptures. Second, through the coming of God into the world of humanity and His demonstration of His ultimate love in and through Christ. And thirdly, through creation. As Paul says in Romans 1:20 again, ever since the creation of the world, His eternal power and divine nature, invisible though they are, have been understood and seen through the things He has made. So we are certain in God because we have responded positively to the revealed truth about God's legislated will, His redemptive love, and His creative power and divinity. In Ecclesiastes 11 and 12, there are four reasons why we can have certainty in God. First, in 11:5, God is the one who makes everything. The work of God is at once mysterious and immensely beautiful. As the psalmist in Psalm 139 says, the knowledge of the work of God is too wonderful for me and so high that I cannot attain it. Like Qoheleth in 11:5, the psalmist thinks about his own conception and birth and says, I praise you, Lord, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. If the certainty of any of you is shaken this morning, consider the universe and look at yourselves. Think about the sun that provides energy from which plants generate oxygen, without which you and I cannot live. As a friend recently reminded me, think about our kidneys that filter 180 liters of blood per day. Neither of these could be attributed to chance. Rather, it makes sense to attribute them to the super intelligent being who for Christians is God. The God who created this amazing universe also created you and me in truly amazing ways. The God who sustains this amazing universe also sustains you and me amazingly. It's not always easy or possible for us to understand how God works in our world and in our lives. It was not easy for Qoheleth either. But he acknowledges God as the one who makes everything beautiful in its time. He encourages us to remember our Creator before we are unable to do so due to aging and death. So let's hold on to our certainty in God, the Creator. Second, we can have certainty in God, not only because He is our Creator, but also because He is our Shepherd. In 12:11, The writer of Ecclesiastes talks about the collected sayings that are given by one shepherd, who is God. The collected sayings are words of wisdom given by God through wise people like Solomon. God shepherds his people through his wisdom, which in Greek is Sophia, and Joe and I named our daughter Sophia because we had both come to appreciate through ups and downs of life that God's wisdom is far better and greater than ours. As the psalm says, the Lord is our shepherd, we shall not want. He makes us lie down in green pastures. He leads us beside still waters. He restores our souls. He leads us in right paths. Even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we fear no evil, for our shepherd is with us. Hallelujah. So let's continue to have certainty in our great and loving shepherd. Thirdly, we can have certainty in God not only because he is our creator and our shepherd, but also because our breath returns to him. 12:7 reads, "And the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the breath returns to God who gave it." The passage refers to Genesis 3:19, where God says to Adam, "For you are dust, and to dust you shall return." It also refers to Genesis 2:7, where Adam became a living being through the breath of life, which is God's breath, which sustains God's creation, including me and you. We exist not only because of the functioning of our body and our organs, such as kidneys, liver, and lungs. We exist because of life we contain. The life Adam received was disfigured, but it was restored through Jesus and through the life-giving Spirit. When our time ends in this world, that life continues in the divine dimension. Finally, we can have certainty in God, not only because he is our creator, our shepherd, and we have assurance that we will continue to live with him even beyond our death, but also because he is our judge. Qohelet says to a young man who he encourages to pursue his interests in life and enjoy them, "Know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." Some people don't like the idea of God being judge, and it's not really enjoyable to be in a courtroom, in a human courtroom, let alone in God's courtroom. And I've experienced that in Ethiopia, being in a human courtroom, and I didn't enjoy the experience at all. God is loving, yes, but he is also the universal lawgiver who inspects our actions. I regard this world as a big courtroom where all our decisions and actions are scrutinized by God. One of the beauties of Christianity is its end-time perspective. In the end, God, whom we know as the Creator, as life-giver, and as loving shepherd, will also act as the just judge. Many of us may feel that there is injustice, unfairness in this world, but Qohelet tells us that one day God will bring all into just judgment. So let's continue with our certainty in God, that he will bring all into just judgment. So friends, we all face uncertainty in life, We don't know what our future holds. We don't often comprehend how God works in this world and in our lives. We don't have any control over our aging and death, but we have certainty in God because He is the maker of everything. He is the loving shepherd. He is the one to whom our breath will return. He is the just judge. As Tom Wright said, God is God. Relax.